from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Wallrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll get a preview of the Stutz Holiday Exhibit and Sale.
I'll talk with a local actor who's in the touring company of Elf the Musical.
And I'll talk with Dick Wolfsey about his new book, and we'll have that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Stutz Artists Association's annual holiday exhibition and open studios event takes place Friday, December 5th from 5 to 9 p.m. More than 25 artists will open their studios and their hearts to visitors, giving them not only an opportunity to see where and how the work is created, but also the opportunity to purchase the art. Artwork ranges from paintings, drawings, and photography to sculpture, jewelry, and furniture. Sharon Gamble chatted with Martha Carlson, co-chair of the Holiday Exhibition, and Lee Dunnington-Jones, co-chair of the Raymond James Stutz Arts Gallery, about the holiday event.
So, Martha, you were out of the room and got elected vice president of the Stutz Artists Association. Was that a joke or is that real?
No, that's real.
Oh.
I was sick and in the hospital. So they figured
that
if I'm in the
hospital. That seems especially cruel.
Yeah. Oh, it was fine. I don't mind.
So I know you moved away from Indiana for a few years. Were you involved with the Stutz? Did you have a studio there before your move?
No, I did not. Okay. When we moved back in here, we moved back in November, and we went to the first holiday show that I had seen in the paper, and I thought, this is a cool building. I didn't even know it existed. So called the phone number and got a studio here.
What's your art form? Tell us about your own art.
Mostly oil painting and some photography, a little bit of sculpture, some wall sculptures.
Wow. Cool. So you need space to work.
Oh, yeah.
Your husband said, get out of here and get a studio, didn't he?
Right. And take all the tools with me.
I take it he's not an artist.
No, he's not.
He's a civilian. That's okay.
Yeah, he's a supporter of the artist.
That's important. That's an important role as well.
Right.
So, and you're also co-chair of this holiday event. Was that something you volunteered for, or were you similarly?
No, I did. I volunteered
okay.
for it.
Good girl. Yeah. And tell us what that planning process is like. I assume it goes on quite a bit longer than we suspect.
Right. We've been working on it for a couple months. Von Biggs is my co-chair, and we've been putting flyers underneath the artist doors asking them if they'd like to have their studio open, and getting some musicians to come in to play throughout the building, and getting some food trucks that'll come and sell some food. And we have Gigi's Cupcakes that are coming, and a Cajun food truck that's thinking about coming in. And then it's called the Davis Harlow Project, is a jazz group that's going to be playing on the third floor. And
so in many ways it's kind of the little sister of the big open house.
Correct.
In the spring.
Yes, we've always had a holiday exhibit, but this one is the first time we've been able to do it where we're not all moving to a big room and setting up our stuff. We're opening the studios there in the hall. That'll be more fun for people to come in and just kind of wander around and see where the studios are and how different artists work.
Sure. All right, and you're getting pretty good response from the artists? So most people want to participate?
44 open studios so far.
Gosh.
So that's a great amount of people that are going to be open.
Wow, cool. Lee, I know you are always in your studio making fabulous things. Does this put extra pressure on you, though, to have plenty of stock?
It does, but I'm trying really hard not to be pressured. I'm making small things, like I'm making bronze Christmas ornaments.
Oh, really?
So I plan to have a lot of $10, $20, $30 items that'll be easy to pick up for gifts.
For people who know your jewelry and the organic forms that you tend to be drawn towards, will they recognize your style in the ornaments you're working on?
They'll recognize my style, but I'm doing angel images and different different other things. I'm even doing a Christmas stocking this year.
In metal?
In bronze, yeah.
Whoa.
They're cool.
Yeah.
So we're really excited about this holiday exhibit. We have more people participating than we ever have. There'll be 22 in the gallery, mm-hmm. And 44 open studios. So this is more than we have ever had.
What is the total population of the Stutz building now?
Total population?
Yeah.
Businesses and
artists. I'm sorry, I should say just the artists.
Right around 100.
Okay.
Right around 100. I think we're a little less than half of the total population of the building.
Uh-huh. And you also have a newish role as...
I have a very newish role.
Yeah.
I am now the co-gallery director, which is a real stretch for me. The biggest thing I've ever done is arrange a show. You remember the Women of a Certain Age shows.
The WACA shows.
The WACA shows. And so I cut my teeth there, I guess. So this time I'm organizing a show every month. It's most exciting, and we've got a lot of interesting exhibits coming up.
What's the hardest thing about being co-director of the gallery?
Herding cats.
Meaning?
Artists are very independent and work on their own schedule, and I should know because I are one. But if you have more than one of them that you are expecting something out of, organizing them and making sure that everybody gets done what they're supposed to be done when they're supposed to have done it is sometimes a challenge.
Do you resort to threats or... Bribes, or
no threats so far.
I probably shouldn't ask this.
My mama taught me I catch more flies with honey
than with vinegar. Okay, I follow. And Martha, you're wearing a couple of administrative hats as vice president of the Stutz Artists Association as well as co-chair of this holiday exhibit. Those hats are somewhat maybe radically different from the hats you wear as an artist, right?
Yes, because Lee's right, herding the cats. It's like, okay, everybody, we have to have your money in, your form filled out.
Yeah.
You know, please make sure you slip it under the door so we can, you know, have you on the list. And we're going to send out an e-blast tonight with the 44 artists that have paid their fee. So that's kind of an incentive.
There you
go. Let
your
name out there, you know, get your money in. So
smart.
And being the vice president is mostly just, you know, showing up at the meetings, making sure that everything gets taken care of in a timely manner, which it does. We don't know how, but it does.
We have some new additions this year at the Stutz. We have a new PR person, and we also have hired an executive director. So,
Good for you.
Cats are running a little bit more smoothly.
Is your executive director position half-time, full-time?
Not full-time.
Not quite half-time. Okay.
Either, but more than we've ever had.
That's great. That's
principal cat herder.
Principal cat herder.
So we're very excited about that, because we feel like we have gone to the next level where we can pay someone else to do some of the consistent things that need to be done year after year.
Right. And not feel like you're stealing time from your studio. Martha, are you a participating artist in the holiday exhibition? Do
yes.
you have time to be in the studio so you can do that
yes.
for yourself?
I am going to be in. My studio will be open, and we hope that by that noontime on December 5th, that everything will be taken care of. Everybody will know their places, and so we can go spend some time in our studio.
Yeah. Tell us about, are you creating some pieces specifically for the holidays?
No. I'm just sticking with my formula. I've been doing some work on cloud pictures, having to do with play, and so taking some photographs of some clouds and also doing some painting of some clouds and having a conversation with people as they come in, if they can tell what it is. And we had a quite lively conversation on one that I think looks like the Grinch, and somebody said, no, I think it looks like it's the map of the United States, and I'm quite worried that Canada is not there. Okay, he said, aren't you worried? And I said, well, no, because I think it looks like the Grinch.
The Grinch. All the Grinch's parts are there. Right. How do you decide when to take a photograph of the clouds as opposed to when to pick up your paints and paint the clouds?
Mostly my paintings are all based on photographs that I've taken.
Oh, okay.
I took a trip to Ireland last year, and I got a lot of good photographs in Ireland and just around town here. And we have a lake house down in Alabama, so take them. And I like having that phone on your or the camera on your phone because it's like, whoa, there's one. Roll your window down. I have to take a picture.
You're never without a camera.
Yeah. So most of my paintings are based on photographs that I've taken.
And then, when does the spirit move you to go to sculpture?
Just depending on what I'm trying to say. I did some pieces dealing with bullying, and so I had some sculpture type things that I was working on with that. So just depending on what I need to say, I decide what kind of venue I'm going to be working in.
And Lee, you are working primarily in jewelry, but you also have choices of different kinds of metals, different kinds of glass, different kinds of gemstones. Do you find yourself getting on kicks where you've just fallen in love with hammered copper, or you've just fallen in love with something and you cannot work in anything but that material?
I do find myself falling into kicks like that. And for a while it was enameling, and then the next kick was making one metal piece out of different metals, actually combining the metals in a marble fashion, like a marble cake. And that took quite a bit of experimenting, and I did nothing until I got some success on that. I didn't really produce much jewelry, but I learned a lot of techniques. So, yes, that happens to me all the time. And now I'm learning to weld.
Uh-oh.
So exciting.
So, welding and jewelry, not always in the same sentence.
Not necessarily, but my sister's working in the studio with me, and she's making handmade beads, and they're gorgeous. And I'm welding clasps. Interesting shapes made with welded together circles and of different sizes, and something that you can put a stick through and close, or just different imaginative ways of making clasps. And these are big, so you can choose to either wear the necklace without the clasp, or wear it with the fancy decorative clasp, or wear it in the front, or wear it in the back.
Sure. Choices are good.
Choices are good.
Is there something that is in your studio that's going to be in your studio when it's open for this show that you secretly don't want anybody to buy? A baby you've made that you really don't want to let go?
No, I don't think so. Not at this point. There have been things like that, and eventually I get ready to let them go. Mm-hmm. And providence seems to work out that way. I get to keep them until I'm ready, and then somebody comes along and can't live without it. So so it kind of works out. I don't know how that happens, but
Martha, do you have something in that you're going to have in the show that you're like, "Oh, I have mixed feelings about putting this out for sale."
Oh, every once in a while I do have a couple pieces that are in the back that I just don't bring out in the front because one of them is a piece I'm doing for my daughter, and it's not finished, and I don't know if it'll ever be finished. I keep adding to it, and I thought, people have asked me about it, and it's like, well, they can ask me, and I'll tell them all about it, but it's not for sale. So I just put it in the back. I feel like, they won't go in the back and snooping around back there, see what I have hidden.
Sharon Gamble with artists and Stutz Artists Association representatives Martha Carlson and Lee Dunnington-Jones. The Stutz Artists Association annual holiday exhibition and open studios event takes place Friday, December 5th from 5 to 9 p.m. and features more than 24 artists with works for sale at all price points. Learn more at stutzartists.com. That's S-T-U-T-Z artists.com.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. The 2003 Will Ferrell movie has become a holiday tradition for some, but what happens when you turn Elf into a musical? To find out, Travis DiNicola spoke with Indianapolis's own Mark Fishback, who plays Santa in the touring production.
Mark, welcome to Art of the Matter. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you, Travis. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. This is pretty fun. You're on tour with Elf, and what's awesome is you get to be part of the company that comes back to Indianapolis where you've done so much work.
I am thrilled beyond belief to be able to play the Murat Center. I've seen shows there over the years, mm-hmm. and the fact that I will be standing on the very stage where I've been in the audience and watching other performers and being able to play the hometown, it's kind of daunting and uh-huh. thrilling at the same time.
That's a really cool thing. I mean, you know, audiences here know you from, I mean, so much work you've done with everything from Tarkington and Bob Directs, and you know, I'm trying to think of some of the shows, Little Shop of Horrors, Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. Help me out here. I know there's a whole bunch I'm missing.
Well, my first community theater show in Indianapolis was in 1985, way, 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 way back when. And I've been doing shows ever since, just past the 25-year, almost going up to the 30-year mark of doing community theater. And within the last, say, 5 or 6 years or so, I started booking professional gigs outside of Indianapolis. And, mm-hmm. and from that point, I've been able to book 2 national tours now within the last year and a lot of regional theater and a lot of summer stock. And but I couldn't have done it. I could not have done it without the training that I got in Indianapolis performing at Footlight, mm-hmm. Civic, Tarkington, Theater on the Square, Beef and Boards, all those places that really give great foundations for people who want to act.
And that is really fantastic, and it's so cool that you know, you've been able to continue on like this and take your career to this level. What was there one particular show that sort of, you know, helped you make that leap from what you were doing, you know, in community theater in Indianapolis to the pro stage?
Well, actually, I decided to attend the UPTA auditions, which is the United Professional Theater Auditions in Memphis, Tennessee. They happen mm-hmm. every year. It's a combination of equity and non-equity theaters. It's very hard to get into. Over the course of 4 days, there are 1,000 audition slots. You get 90 seconds to perform in front of an auditorium full of different theaters. I did very well. I received approximately 17 callbacks for that evening, and I sort of propelled that Joy Doing from Joy Doing Casting happened to see me there, brought me into New York for the tour of West Side Story. That was the Broadway revival that was out.
Sure.
It played in Indianapolis, I believe, a year ago, and then I was on the final tour the year after that.
Okay.
And that sort of propelled me into another level. That's it's thrilling to be able to say, you know, thousands upon thousands of people now have seen me across the country. And I don't think I would have been able to say that had it not been getting out of my comfort zone, trying something different. 90 seconds is pretty daunting to impress someone, but luckily it all fell in my favor.
Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Now, is this the first time that you've been in a touring company that's come to Indianapolis?
It is, actually.
How cool.
We've played, we just finished the West Side Story Tour in mm-hmm. mid-June of this year.
And you were Doc in that, right?
I was Doc, mm-hmm. yes, which is a great role. Minimal stage time, but maximum impact of what I do on stage. And we did play IU, South Bend at the Morris Center. We played Purdue. So we were in Indiana. Unfortunately, we didn't play Ball State, which is my alma mater, and we didn't play Indianapolis, but I can luckily rectify that with Elf the Musical.
So how cool was it? I'm guessing, you know, after you got cast in Elf, it was then you found out the tour schedule and saw, oh, wait, we're in Indianapolis right before Christmas.
Right. We were actually going through the audition process knowing that there were 2 tours of Elf going out. One was going to cover the West Coast of America, and then mm-hmm. we were going to be on the East Coast. Well, we didn't find that out. I didn't find out I was on the East Coast tour, which included Indianapolis, until after I received the part and received my contract.
Awesome.
So not only did I have the thrill of, wow, I booked the job. This is going to be fantastic. I mean, who doesn't want to be Santa at Christmas time?
Exactly. Yeah.
And then to find out on top of that I was going to be playing the hometown, it was like Christmas came early.
That is really neat. And how fun. I mean, okay, so the role of Santa in Elf the Musical has got to be just so much fun to play. I mean, obviously, you know, the musical is based on the movie, and it's such a great movie. And Ed Asner was wonderful, of course, as Santa Claus. But how fun to play Santa in this show, I bet.
It is great fun. In fact, the treatment of the characters is a little different from the movie.
Mm-hmm.
The movie, which I love and watch every year, the Bob Newhart character, the one that sort of acts as Buddy's dad, does not exist in the musical. So all the narration that fell to Bob Newhart's character now goes to Santa.
Okay.
So I sort of act as the narrator telling the story of Buddy the Elf. And then not only that, but I get the great scenes with Buddy in the in the North Pole toy shop, and then in Central Park when the sleigh crashes.
Of course,
So it's I'm the first person people see. I set the tone of the show. We have a great opening number with Santa and the elves, which is really hilarious. And no one is doing it in the different regional productions that are licensed very sporadically throughout the country. We're doing an opening number that is being tested by Warner Brothers and by New Line Cinema, the people that own the rights to Elf. And we're sort of pioneering this new opening number to see how it plays. And that's always thrilling, too.
So we get sort of a special show here in Indianapolis then.
Yes, absolutely.
So I got to ask you, had you ever played Santa before, you know, like at a department store or anything like that? Or
you know, I have played Santa. My first time being a stocky kid was in the eighth grade, you know, Christmas pageant, which, you know, I couldn't have done it without that. And then most recently, I was blessed to play Santa at the Beef and Boards for three consecutive Christmases in a row.
Oh, yes. Excellent.
Christmas Spectacular. And that is so much fun. So to be able – sorry, I'm stuttering because I get all excited about Christmas – to sing those Christmas songs, to have, you know, the Christmas spirit. We have trees, and it was just, I'm surrounded by my friends, and we're just spreading the Christmas spirit. So being able to take that Santa character and bring it into a new show and then spread the Christmas cheer even further with 11 or 12 stops throughout the East Coast, you just come to work and you just beam. I smile almost every minute. I mean, I always remind myself that there were quite a few people who auditioned and I was chosen, and I get to spread the Christmas cheer, and I'm thankful for the opportunity and just to give people a little dose of Christmas. Now, it's going to be thrilling in Indianapolis because we're there the week before Christmas. So the Christmas spirit will be really revved up. Right now we're in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Okay.
And They're loving the show. We just opened last night, and we go through Sunday, but it's maybe a little early. They haven't had any snow yet, and the decorations are just now going out. But we've decided we're going to start the season right. We're going to start their holiday right. We're going to start it with Elf.
Nice. Very good. Hey, so for people who love the movie, what should they expect with the musical?
All of the touchstone moments are there. The moments in the movie that are hilarious, like Buddy going through the revolving door, Buddy eating spaghetti and syrup, all of the iconic lines, all the iconic moments are still there. The differences are really in the music and the dancing.
Okay.
We have quite the band that travels with us. The score for this show is very big band, very Broadway, very brassy. It's bright. We have exceptional musicians, and since I'm the first one that goes out during the show, every time I hear that orchestra play the overture, I just get a little thrilled that, hey, this is happening. This sounds great, and let's go. It just really peps you up.
Mark,
we have great dancing and scenery, and
Excellent, excellent. Well, before I let you go, I got to ask, can you give us a ho-ho-ho?
Absolutely not, wasn't it? But let me see if I can work up a good ho-ho here.
Okay, okay.
Merry Christmas!
Mark Fishback, thank you so much. Merry Christmas to you. Can't wait to see you in Elf the Musical here.
Thank you, Travis. Thank you for having me. Merry Christmas.
Travis DiNicola with actor Mark Fishback. He plays Santa in Elf the Musical, which will be in town at the Old National Center from December 16th through the 20th. You can get more information at indianapolis.broadway.com. Again, indianapolis.broadway.com.
Sounds like someone's turkey got loose.
That's the pardon. That's the pardon turkey. Well, we always pardon them in pairs. So that's the pair of pardon turkeys.
Pair of pardon turkeys.
Pair of pardon turkeys.
Easy for you to say, Sharon.
Yeah, easy for me to say. If you're hearing us on Thanksgiving night, I hope you're having a lovely meal.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. If you're hearing us on Saturday morning, I hope you've figured out what to do with all those leftovers. But
Happy Small Business Saturday.
Happy Small Business Saturday, yes. And we have events to help you burn calories on that calendar we call.
What do we do? The gobbly edition.
Yeah. Well, yeah, actually, you're right. That's right at the top of the list. Go out and patronize a small business. There really is an art to being a small business owner. And, of course, there are tons of places in Indianapolis where you can buy artisanal goods and artistic products that are locally made and spend local.
There you go. Spend local.
Yeah.
And spend often.
Indeed.
Yeah, but Small Business Saturday is a very cool thing. In fact, I have heard a rumor, Sharon, that Santa is actually going to be making an appearance on Small Business Saturday from noon to 2 at Indy Reads Books on Mass Ave.
Really?
It's true.
I wonder what's on Santa's reading list. Maybe I'll go ask him.
You should go ask him.
I should.
What else do you have there?
Well, I know you've been on a bit of a journey to catch up with all the Nutcracker productions in town. Don't forget that Butler Ballet brings the magic of the Nutcracker to life with pyrotechnics and cannon blasts and waltzing flowers and dancing fairies in 5 performances December 4th to the 7th. Those will be at Clues Memorial Hall. The performances feature 106 ballet dancers, 106 Butler dancers and 30 young dancers from the Indianapolis community. Also, live orchestra accompaniment. The Butler Ballet Orchestra will be directed by Richard Alden Clark. So a great grand tradition at Clues Hall, December 4th through the 7th. I'm telling you now so you can make sure you get your tickets.
Very cool. Well, since you're talking Nutcracker, I'll talk Nutcracker.
All right.
And Gregory Hancock Dance Theater, a very different sort of Nutcracker. If you're looking for the traditional one, then maybe you should check out the one that Sharon just spoke about at Butler. But Gregory Hancock's Nutcracker, a little bit different, same sort of storyline, but Clara's a homeless orphan, and it's a little bit more modern take on it, and it is going to be performed on December 5th and 6th and 7th by Gregory Hancock Dance Theater out at the Pike Performing Arts Center, and they do a special tea as well that you can attend. It's a lot of fun, and just gorgeous costumes and really interesting, fun dancing, but again, a little bit more of a non-traditional take on Nutcracker, but still very family appropriate.
Absolutely. Very fun. Hey, we're talking about Small Business Saturday and buying local art. The Indiana Plein Air Painters Association has a juried member show, which is on exhibit and for sale. Most of the paintings are still available at the Hoosier Salon Gallery, their new digs at 22 Rangeline Road in Carmel, just around the corner from Mudbugs, if you know downtown Carmel. That show is up through December 7th, and if you have an art lover in your family, that might be a good place to go spend on Small Business Saturday.
Very cool. Well, what is Christmas without magic?
Nothing. You can't have Christmas without magic.
See, and so I think going to a magic show is a great way to celebrate Christmas. In fact, you can check out Taylor Martin's Indie Magic Monthly Show number 80. He's done 80 of these already, which is very cool. He's been doing them for over 5 years now. And the title of this one is A Bit of Magic for the Holidays on Tuesday, December 2nd at Theater on the Square. The lobby opens at 7, and it's always a lot of fun. Taylor always brings together a lot of different interesting magicians, including this year, the first time he's performing here in Indianapolis, Illinois performer Mark Presley will present his take on magic as the Nerdgician. Nerdgician, that's right.
That's a great title.
Uh-huh. And then he's also going to apparently be doing his award-winning Thimble Magic Act. And Corbay Troyer, a local close-up magic legend, is going to be doing his coin dances on, making his coins dance on his fingers. And then there's Aaron Kalinowski, a doctor who will move you with an amazing performance of the Gypsy Thread. All of this, plus you get to hear Taylor sing the Chipmunk Song. So that is going to be taking
that's
place.
That's worth the price of admission
there,
right there.
Indie Magic Monthly, December 2nd at Theater on the Square, 7 o'clock. How do you follow that, Sharon?
Well, I'm thinking maybe we need to get Taylor to record that and include that in our holiday Art of the Matter. Hey, another Small Business Saturday destination. The Idlejorg has this new exhibition. You heard about it a few weeks ago here on the Art of the Matter. It's called New Art 2.0, and it's a collection of prints by 50 contemporary Native and non-Native American artists, many of them Idlejorg Contemporary Art Fellows. The subjects include landscapes, political topics, environmental statements, as well as portraiture. There are 90 limited edition prints that will be on exhibit by artists and for sale. And prices range from $500 to $4,000. So if you've always wanted to collect or somebody in your life is a collector of some of these artists, you can go there and do a little holiday shopping. Find out more and learn who the artists in the exhibition are at idlejorg.org.
That sounds very good. Hey, this sounds a great thing, I think, to do with your family, planning for a little trip on Saturday, December 6th from 4 to 7 p.m. It's the Holiday Home Tour at historic Fort Harrison. And what they're doing is this year's event includes four different destinations around the historical Lawton Loop that were all once homes to officers at Fort Benjamin Harrison. The turn-of-the-century homes, they've all been beautifully renovated and will be decorated for the holidays. And they'll have live music and food and wine and hot beverages. And there's a performance by the Indianapolis Children's Choir, as well as some other groups as well, including members of the ISO. And there's a gift shop of locally made art and gifts and all sorts of fun and hot cider. So that is all taking place out at Fort Harrison, and it benefits the Lawrence Arts Center's programming for their youth art programs. What a very cool thing to do. So you can get more information at lawrenceartscenter.net about the Holiday Home Tour.
Fabulous. So here's something you do not want to bring the children to. In fact, they're going to get turned away at the door because you have to be 17 or older to attend A Christmas Carol Unscripted, which opens, if you're hearing us, Thursday night, Thanksgiving night. It opens tomorrow night, the Friday after Thanksgiving, closes on December 26th. Where? Well, of course, Comedy
Where?
Sports on Mass Ave. Audience suggestions will contribute to the 90-minute performance. It's very loosely plotted and largely improvised. So they ask the question, what if Ebenezer Scrooge, instead of being a moneylender, what if he was a food truck operator? Or what if Tiny Tim said anything other than God bless us, everyone? Find out the answers to these burning questions and more when you go to the Friday night performances. Those are at 10 p.m. of A Christmas Carol Unscripted. Find out more at Comedy Sports, which, of course, is spelled S-P-O-R-T-Z.
If you're looking for another non-traditional Christmas event to attend, holiday event to attend, then you might want to also consider, after you leave Comedy Sports, going over to Phoenix Theater to check out A Very Phoenix Xmas Number 9, Flashing Through the Snow. That's right, flashing, not dashing, flashing. So it is the annual curated, we'll say, production of lots of fun and interesting and unusual and sometimes surprising vignettes that all have something to do with Xmas as interpreted by the Phoenix Theater. And that opens on November 28th, runs through December 21st, A Very Phoenix Xmas 9, Flashing Through the Snow.
Back to something that is rated okay for the kids.
Oh, and did I mention that one's probably not for the kids?
Probably not so much. They probably need to be old enough to hear references to maybe some naughty bits. Just saying. The 2014 Nights Before Christmas Candlelight Tour of Homes features six private homes, two churches, the Lanier Mansion, the Schofield House, and, as they say, much, much more. You're like, wait, Lanier Mansion, that's not in Indianapolis. No, it's not, because you are going to...
Road trip. Where are we going, Sharon?
Road trip. You're going south to Madison, Indiana. That tour goes on this weekend as well as December 5th and 6th. Hours are 5 to 9 on Fridays and 3 to 9 on Saturdays. Find out more at nightsbeforechristmas.com, nightsbeforechristmas.com. Gorgeous historic homes, mostly lit by candlelight. Definitely worth the 2-hour road trip to get there.
Very good, very good. Well, Sharon.
What?
Goodness. I hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving. As did your turkey, as did mine, and that everyone is out there enjoying Small Business Saturday and enjoying the holidays. And I'll just say that if you want to learn more about other great local arts events to check out this weekend and next, then you can go to indiearts.org/guide, the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide website. But Sharon and I will be back next week for more of that calendar that we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Dick Wolfsee has a different take on life. His wry observations have been the raw material for more than 700 humorous columns, radio features, and books. And just when you think you can't find any more funny bits, well, his new book appears. It's called The Right Fluff, Weightless Observations of Earth. And Sharon Gamble invited Dick to read one of his essays as part of their conversation.
I took my dog, Toby, for a walk, and about a third of the way around the lake, he decided it was too cold and snowy, so he took off back to the shopping center where I had parked the car. A woman walking out of Kroger, where I usually shop, says she saw my companion run inside the store when the automatic doors closed. I went to the service desk and told the lady that my dog was somewhere inside. She said, "Okay, I'll make an announcement to see if we can locate him." Then she asked, "What kind of a dog is it?" Well, this struck me as very funny. I guess they didn't want to hand over the wrong dog. In any case, this is the kind of story I love to repeat, so first I called my buddy Bob. He chuckled through the part about Toby running into a supermarket. "And listen to this," I said, trumpeting the forthcoming hysterical ending. "The woman at the service desk wanted to know what breed he was before she got on the PA." I waited for his laughter. But instead, Bob said, "That's odd. Do you think Toby knows he's a beagle?" "Huh? What does that mean, Bob?" I tried to explain the reason the last line was funny, but there was no point. Eager to share this whimsical story with someone else, I called my friend and editor, Heidi. I knew she'd get a kick out of it. "So, Heidi, I was walking the dog around the lake yesterday." "Wait a second. You walked him near a lake, Dick? I hope you didn't let Toby get too near the ice." "Okay, Heidi, fine. But listen, so Toby's about 30 feet ahead of me, and..." "What? You didn't have a leash on him, Dick? Who walks a beagle without a leash?" "Not the point of the story. So all of a sudden, he takes off." "Well, his feet were probably cold. Don't you have booties for him? By the way, I hope you didn't have to chase him with that bad knee of yours." "Listen to me, Heidi. The lady is walking out of the store and tells me that Toby got into the supermarket. I imagine he was howling at the butcher. And yes, I know you were thinking of cutting out red meat, but Heidi, I really want to finish my story." "Okay, fine, Dick." So I walk up to the counter and tell the woman that my dog is loose in the store, and I ask her to get on the PA to see if we can locate him. You will never in a million years guess what this woman said to me before she made the announcement. Said Heidi, "Well, I assume she wanted to know what kind of dog it was." I'm laughing now. It's funny. Dejected, I put down the phone and decided that I was only going to relate my future experiences through the written word, where I can make my point clearly without being interrupted and losing my train of thought. Well, hold on a second. It's the phone. Oh, gosh, it's Heidi. She wants to know why I prefer Kroger to Marsh. Okay, that was a good one. Thanks for picking that one.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So there's a difference between being an interactive comedian and a humorist who maybe discovers what's funny in the solitude of wherever you write.
Yeah, well, the fun for me, of course, is as soon as the woman said to me, "What kind of a dog is it?" immediately I knew this was a column. And now the question is going home and creating a whole story around it.
Yeah.
So as I tell everybody, every story is based on truth, but I know it when it happens. So you may recall my first story was when I got a note from Social Security that my prostate exam wasn't covered because they had me listed as a woman. Well, it's, I mean, I, you sort of look up to the heavens and say, thank you, God, the humor gods, because this is a story.
Because Richard is such a common female name,
right? Well, my favorite line there is when he said, are you on Medicare? And I said, yes. And he said, which parts? And I said, the parts you're not covering. And he, for some reason, didn't find that funny. It was my best line. I just don't understand. But the point is, yeah, so I know that. And then I write it. And then, of course, I read it. I do it on the radio.
Right.
We were talking before, you know, whether I, if I read it to an audience, a live audience, how that would work. But, you know, laughter is a very social thing. So it might work. I don't know.
Do you ever try your material? Well, obviously, you gave an example of it.
Yeah.
But
I know what you mean.
Are there people in your universe who reliably get where you're going that you
well
you
my editor my editor generally does
and, or she wouldn't have said I assume the lady wanted to know what kind of dog,
it was right. I wasn't sure what and my wife, I often read to her, but often I read that to her just because I want to make sure that I sort of a lot of times use her voice and I want to make sure she's comfortable with it.
Sure.
But again, because laughter is such a social thing, my wife will sometimes, I'll give her the essay and she'll read it and she won't even break a smile.
Oh, dear.
Oh, no, that's okay. She'll read it, and she won't break a smile, and she'll hand it back to me. She'll say, this was one of your best.
And, oh, my gosh. Yeah,
well, I know, but that's okay, because there are lots of people who laughter is a social thing, and there are some people who can sit and watch. I mean, there are times that I'll watch Jon Stewart, who I think is brilliant, or Colbert, and I will not laugh out loud, but I'll think at the end, that's one of the funniest pieces they ever did. But that's not because I don't have a sense of humor. It's because laughter's social.
Right.
And you hear other people's laughter, and that makes you laugh. And that's okay. That's just the way it is.
Do you ever crack yourself up in private?
That's a great question. That's a great question. If I make myself laugh, that's a good thing. And because, you know, it's a process. I'm sitting and I'm writing. And then I think of something. And what was, okay, if I can think of an example. There's one story in there about my wife getting bitten by the cat.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there writing the story, and our friends were with us. And I remember writing, we decided to sit and spend the day in the emergency room because with my wife's health insurance, it was cheaper than going to the movies. And for some reason, when I wrote that line, I started to laugh because I knew that was clever. So, yeah, I do actually sometimes amuse myself. Yeah.
So how did you discover you had this talent for taking something that other people, like the guy on the other end of the phone at the Social Security helpline, taking things that other people would just keep plodding along?
Right.
But you do something. You stop, you pause, you look at it from another angle. I mean,
yeah, well, that's exactly right. I mean, when something happens, and it can be as mundane as, you know, when we got new carpeting in the house. And I realized all the funny things. So we're getting new carpeting in the house, and we had to pack things. And I thought, how do you pack things? And I thought, well, maybe if I put everything in a box by their letter. And that cracked me up also. So I had things, everything A was in a box, everything B. And I said, everything C was in a box. And my wife said, well, that's why we haven't seen the cat in 2 weeks. You just have to take, you know, I even have one in here, Sharon, about my lung biopsy.
Yeah, I wasn't sure where that was going to go.
Okay.
I was a little scared at the beginning of that.
So let me, I have to tell you, this is the loudest my wife has ever laughed. Not at it in the book, but when it really happened. So I go in for the lung biopsy, and I'm fine, by the way. But I go in for the biopsy, and they give me something, and they put me in bed. And for whatever reason, the nurse comes in, and she says to me, you cannot get out of bed now for 2 hours. It was something to do with the test.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot get out of bed for 2 hours. And my wife is sitting right next to me. And I said, okay. And she said, and because you can't get out of bed for 2 hours, I'm going to encourage you to go to the bathroom. And I said to the nurse, okay, fine. How are you going to do that? And for some reason, my wife, I've never seen her laugh so hard in my life. They had to sedate her, actually. That's what's neat about that joke, if you will. I don't like to call it a joke, but is that it's a It's a classic example of sort of reinterpreting the meaning of something. Because I'm going to encourage you means one thing, but when I respond the way I did,
sure,
you reinterpret what that could have meant. And all jokes work that way. It's a reinterpretation. If I said to you, somebody said to you, I always felt like a man trapped in a woman's body. Well, we hear that expression all the time, and we have a feeling of what that means. But the punchline is, and then I was born. But do you see how that reinterprets the
sure
whole meaning of the first part of the sentence? And that's what humor is all about.
And it's also the basis of the so-called lowest form of humor, the pun.
It is, but that is such a special kind of a pun. I'd almost say it wasn't a pun because it's that classy a pun.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a whole – one of my favorite pieces is about the survey at the dentist's office.
Oh, that, yeah.
Do you feel like your teeth are moving?
Yeah, I know.
What kind of a question is that?
I know. Well, my doctor and my general practitioner too, he whenever I come in, he says, oh, no. He says, I'm going to be in your book again, aren't I? And I said, yes. And there's always something that's funny. And people are good sense of humor. I bought a dental – what'd you call those things?
Cleans your gums.
Cleans your gums.
The water pick thing.
And it was the directions. I do a lot of things in my book about directions. I just wrote a piece about a new toaster we bought, and it's like a 4-page directions. And
what?
Yeah, I know. And I'm thinking, it says things like, under no circumstances should you attach anything else to the toaster. What, your iPad? What would you attach to your poster,
maybe
to your toaster?
You daisy chain the coffee maker, the toaster.
Well, that's what they were saying, It says we made the cord short. This is true, so that you wouldn't trip over it. Would you run it, the cord from your garage through your living room to your toaster? I mean, But all comedians, that's what all comedians do.
There is no common sense left in the
universe.
There isn't any. So I'm curious, where is the line between Dick Wolfsey, the guy, and the persona who writes this material?
Well, I don't think there is. Obviously I'm not a barrel of laughs at home all the time. But
That's not what Mary Ellen says.
No, but I think I'm pretty much the same person. And I think, if I do say so, that I think my longevity on television has been due to the fact that people know that that's who I really am. So, I just was at the Gift and Hobby show a couple of weeks ago, and, people came up and talked to me, spent 15, 20 minutes talking to me, and I love every minute of that. And I like to talk to people. Every book's a conversation.
It's interesting to have a brand, though, as you point out in one of your talks about people running to you at the grocery and, what are you doing here?
That's right. What are you doing here? I'm buying bread. I don't know why you're shocking that you. But I understand that question. Yeah.
People are just surprised to see you out of context.
They're used to hearing you on the radio. But I think we all feel that way when we see somebody that we recognize from TV or something.
So there is an everyman quality about the person who writes these.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think that's true. I think the greatest compliment I can get, and I'll give you one great example of it, is when people say to me, I can't believe that's happening to you, that happened to me. Mm. A column that I recently wrote, and I think it's in here, Sharon, is the fact that my wife was going to her high school reunion, and for a month, she was pretending she wanted me to go with her. And for a month, I was pretending
that I wanted to go.
And we finally realized that I really didn't want to go, and she really didn't want me to go. And when that was published in all the newspapers I'm in, I got literally dozens. That doesn't seem like a lot, but, for people to sit down and write, dozens, scores of emails from people saying, I can't believe it. That's exactly what happened in my family. I hate going to reunions. My wife didn't want me because she thought I'd be a drag, and everybody related to it.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Marriage counselor is part of your job description.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Or psychologist.
Yeah.
Somebody else who can validate reality for people.
Well, that's what people want. They want to see something that they can say, that happened to me too. And I talk about my own strange behaviors. I was just looking. This is one of my favorite. Round figures.
Is that real?
We all have our obsessions, compulsions.
Yeah.
I have to have round numbers in my checkbook. I have to. And in this story, the woman called me because she knows I feel that way. And she called and she said, Mr. Wolf, see, it's Sarah at the bank. I said, oh, no, don't tell me. And, of course, most people would think they were overdrawn, but right. I knew that wasn't it. She said, well, we had to issue you some credit for something that you did, and you now have $2,000.17 in your account. I said, oh, God. I said, I'll call you right back. So I went online, and I went to my online payment, and I paid Shell 17 cents. I mean, I'm not making this up. This is true. I have to have round numbers. And I pay in round numbers, too. If my bill is $94.12, I give them $100. I'll get it back. I'm not giving away the money.
Oh, sure.
But I just can't. I have to be round numbers. It's bizarre. I'm not proud of that, by the way. But I tell you right now, there are people at home going, wow, I do that, too. How weird is that? I'm not the only person that does that.
Sharon Gamble with humorist Dick Wolfsey, whose column is published in dozens of newspapers. You can hear his musings, Life in a Nutshell, here on WFYI Radio. And you can get his new book, The Right Fluff, Weightless Observations of Earth, at wolfsey.com. That's WOLFSIE.com. And check out the book signing schedule there, too. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m. I'll find out about the Butler Christmas program called Rejoice.
I'll get a preview of the Indianapolis School of Ballet's Nutcracker.
And I'll go behind the scenes of the Georgia O'Keeffe exhibit at the IMA, and we'll have that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.